It's a NewsBuzz edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. It's our Friday NewsBuzz where we take a number of issues, have short conversations about them to wrap up the week. The tally of deaths from the worst known outbreak of Ebola virus continues its frightening rise. Now the World Health Organization this week says the epidemic is still accelerating and could afflict more than 20,000 people before it could be brought under control. 20,000, that's almost seven times the current number of reported cases. And the WHO also acknowledged that in areas of intense transmission, the actual number of cases may be two to four times higher than currently reported. According to the latest worrying figures released by the WHO yesterday, the death toll has risen to over 1,500 out of over 3,000 cases in four West African countries, the countries of Guinea, Liberia, Sierra Leone, and Nigeria. If you may remember, earlier this month, we spoke with an Iowan who is a hydrologist and until recently was working in the NGO sector on water and sanitation projects in Liberia. Libby Cassavant is now back in Iowa City, in our Iowa City studio, back in her hometown of Iowa City, after just returning from Liberia. Libby Cassavant, welcome. Nice to see you in person.
Yeah, it's great to see you too. Thanks for having me back.
Not only you are with us, but your sister is with us. She is not in the studio in Iowa City. Your sister, Kayla Cassavant, is joining us via Skype from the West African country of Senegal. And Kayla, hello to you. You are in Dakar?
Yes, I am. I'm in Dakar.
You are, a little bit about your work background. You're what do you do? You have been up to this point in Monrovia doing what work?
I've been working for an organization called Building Markets, and we work with the local private sector, so with small, medium businesses, to help create linkages between them and larger businesses and organizations. We try to improve procurement for large businesses in Liberia to increase business activity for locally owned companies.
Mm-hmm. So within the last few days, both of you have fled Liberia. Libby, when we last spoke early in August, you were in Monrovia, actually at your sister's in Monrovia, hoping to stay, to continue your work as a hydrologist. You were hopeful the situation would improve and you wouldn't have to leave. What was the point that changed your mind, that made you decide to leave Liberia?
Well, as you say, I was hoping to stay, and I was hopeful that things would start to improve very quickly after the government started to get more involved in treating Ebola patients. Not wanting to stay simply out of stubbornness, if I found that I wasn't able to help in a meaningful way. And then I was also worrying my friends and family back home.
Mm-hmm. Libby or Kayla, when Libby said stubborn, I heard you laugh a little bit there. You were both, I know, not eager to leave. You wanted to stay. But how did your decision get made to leave Liberia?
Well, it was a difficult decision, primarily because it's a gray area where I didn't feel like I was in personal danger as it was. It was more the fear of something happening. You know, a lot of things were changing every day. Flights were leaving. You know, the airlines weren't flying anymore, so there was less opportunity to leave, which put some pressure on the situation.
So you were afraid of possibly being trapped there.
That's true. Though I think there would probably be a way to get out, but it would be very expensive. Mm-hmm. So all the airlines, the ones that are still here, have raised their prices. So it would be less feasible. But my personal safety, I felt pretty safe on a daily basis where I live. You know, I don't come into direct contact with anyone who's sick in my work, or you know, I'm pretty. Pretty isolated from that in my daily life. So I didn't feel really at risk from Ebola so much as just the possibility of things that could happen. Also, some riots had been happening, so there was some question of civil unrest from everything going on.
Right. We've been hearing reports here, and I'm sure you've been both have been listening, consuming these reports. A neighborhood in Monrovia where you lived, I believe it's called West Point, about 100,000 people crammed into an area. We can only call it a slum, you would agree, shacks, fallen down shacks. How much contact did you have in West Point? Is that a place you often visited? Kayla?
No, never. It's not recommended to visit there. It's a little dangerous. It is close to where I lived, but I really never go there.
Okay.
Kayla, have you seen any of that?
No, I haven't seen anything like that. Actually, I mean, I know it happens, but I haven't seen it myself. And mostly it's been pretty calm, especially with the new curfew that's been put in place. It's actually really strange being on the street at even 8 o'clock at night and there's no one there. And usually, you know, there are lots of people out walking around. So it's pretty quiet.
Has your contact, how have you experienced the Ebola outbreak, Libby?
Right. For me, I agree with Kayla that it's pretty easy to avoid coming into contact with sick people. And so I didn't feel directly at risk for getting Ebola, but it was much more the possibility of civil unrest that made me feel like maybe it was time to leave. Mm-hmm. The point when the treatment center that you mentioned in West Point was ransacked, that's only about 25-minute walk away from where Kayla's apartment is. So the whole time that I was in Liberia, I kept telling my friends and family, you know, well, if it gets to the point where there's riots or where food prices are going up, and it starts to seem unsafe, that's the point when I'll start thinking about going home. And then when that treatment center was, you know, everything was carried out of it, the patients, the bed sheets, the mattresses, for reasons that were really hard to explain, that was the point where I started thinking, okay, people are being less reasonable about this. People are getting upset. And the situation is not going to improve very quickly. So was the day when I went ahead and started looking for ways to get home a little bit sooner than I'd been planning.
And there were reports, and Kayla, maybe you can speak to this, of some people, Liberians, believing that the Ebola, maybe you can speak to this, Kayla, the fact that perhaps some of the civil unrest is caused by the fact that many Liberians, some Liberians at least, believe that the Ebola epidemic was a hoax as a way to get more international aid.
Well, that's absolutely true. There are people that still believe that, though I think more and more people are believing because of international news and pressure from different organizations and more outreach to the communities to explain, you know, what is Ebola and that it is real. I think that that's less an issue now than it was, but still, yeah, there's still some people that think that the government is trying to use their influence, and it just comes from history, not trusting the government in the past, and it makes it difficult now to really believe what they're saying.
Mm-hmm. What are some of the secondary effects that this, the weight, the burden that this has put on society? There is this curfew. Kids are not going to school. Are people going to work, Libby?
Yeah, I would say that pretty much every aspect of people's lives is somehow affected by this outbreak, because many people are not being called into work. They're being asked to stay home or work from home. No children are going to school. This is the time of year when school would be starting up again. As I said before, food prices are going up. Kayla can tell you more about that, but just my last day in Monrovia, I was walking in town with one of my Liberian friends, and she was telling me that, you know, a bag of rice used to be $45, and then it was up to 60 just in the last 2 weeks.
For a bag of rice,
and that's the main staple that people depend on. So if you're a Liberian family feeding, you know, 4 or 5 kids, an increase in food prices like that is a huge deal. So that day we were walking around town, and I saw so many people carrying bags of rice on their head to their houses, trying to stockpile as much as they could before the price went up again.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that so many things are more difficult there now than they used to be, just because this crisis is kind of overshadowing everything that's happening in the country.
Kayla, can you give us another idea of other aspects that have made life very difficult there?
Sure. Well, I'll start with a positive one, is that everyone's washing their hands everywhere, which is kind of neat to see. People really take it seriously. And before you enter any building, there's a bucket outside, and you wash your hands before entering. At force, before you can enter the building.
And
I was asking someone just the other day, I was asking them if they thought that was something that would continue even after Ebola was gone, because, you know, it's just good practice. And they were really positive there. They said that, yes, we're going to continue doing it. We think the government should continue enforcing hand washing, and just thinking of all of the efforts that have gone into sanitation in the past, 10 years, and then all of a sudden people's attitude seems to be changing. So that's one positive thing. But on the negative side, of course, like Libby said, there are economic impacts, food prices going up, and we're just starting now to try to understand what exactly the impact will be. There have been a lot of guesses, but not a lot of concrete information. So my organization, Building Markets, we've been working on that, actually conducting surveys with local businesses to try to get a better idea of exactly what is the impact so far, and then continuing to follow that and understand what will be the long-term impacts, and then, what will be the road to recovery.
And is it clear at this point, with the epidemic still not under control, Kayla, what is the path forward?
Well, so far, one of the main difficulties is movement. Movement has been very restricted, and a lot of supplies for businesses and trade, they bring products from Guinea, from Côte d'Ivoire, from Sierra Leone. And with those restricted border crossings now, a lot of businesses that profited off that before are unable to continue, so they've actually closed down business. And even traveling between counties in Liberia has become restricted because of the quarantines. So it's really hindered economic progress at this point. In some of the more agriculture-focused areas, there are concerns for food security because farmers, we're trying to better understand exactly what the impact is, but it seems that agriculture production is low, and this is actually a low time of year anyway for agriculture production. So there's a real concern of food shortage.
If you've just joined us, my guests in this portion of River to River, Kayla Cassavant is joining us via Skype from the West African country of Senegal. She just arrived there after leaving her home in Monrovia in Liberia due to the Ebola epidemic. Libby Cassavant, her sister, is back in Iowa City, in the studio until recently. Libby Cassavant worked as a hydrologist. She is a hydrologist who, until recently, worked in the NGO sector on water and sanitation projects in Liberia. And we're talking about the difficulties in West Africa right now, and also their return or their leaving of Liberia due to the epidemic. Libby, you left Liberia a few days ago. How hard was it to get back to the United States?
For me, it wasn't too challenging. I've heard a lot of horror stories about people having flights canceled or, flights delayed, things being booked up. Fortunately, I already had a ticket leaving that was supposed to leave on September 7th. And I was able to get that ticket advanced by about 3 weeks. And the price difference was significant because, as Kayla said, prices have gone up a lot. Some tickets that used to be maybe $500 are now $6,000.
Wow.
So I was fortunate that I already had a ticket and I could use that ticket as credit for advancing it to a new date, but it has definitely become more difficult to leave.
What about extra procedures? You came to the United States. What were people doing to check your health that you were not infected with Ebola?
Well, when I got to the airport in Monrovia, I had to wait in line and have my temperature checked to make sure I didn't have a fever. And there's also a form that we had to fill out to explain where in the country we had been and if we had been in contact with any Ebola patients.
Mm-hmm.
Once we entered the airport, we went through security and customs like normal. And the rest of the trip was normal. There wasn't anything different about it. When I got to the U.S., there was no additional check to...
When you landed in the United States, coming from West Africa, there was no additional check?
No, that's correct.
Did that surprise you?
Yeah, I almost expected to be, escorted to a glass room and kept there for a couple of days or something. But fortunately for me, I didn't have any symptoms. I wasn't feeling ill, and no one asked me to do anything out of the ordinary.
Right, but the nature of Ebola is that I think the incubation period is even several weeks. You can be without symptoms having been infected, right?
That's the case, yeah. I would have to say, possibly the thinking on this is that a person in the U.S., possibly suffering from Ebola, would probably seek medical attention as soon as they could, because they know that in the U.S. they'll receive good medical care, and there are professionals here who are trained to help them. So maybe officials are thinking that, you know, the people will report themselves if they start to feel ill. But I'm not sure what the reason is for not tracking people once they get to the U.S.
Thank you so much, Libby and Kayla Cassavant, two native Iowans until recently, working and living in Ebola-stricken Liberia. Coming up in the second half hour of our Friday News Buzz, new research on what baby babble can tell us, an update on concussions as the football season begins, and Kembru McLeod and his Million Robot March Against Pink Locker Rooms. That's happening this evening in Coralville. We'll hear about that coming up in just a few minutes. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. We'll be right back.